A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's basically two questions folded into each other. First, when radio was the dominant medium, how did people actually listen? Not the technology, but the experience. And second, a lot of us know that feeling where you're listening to a great podcast, but then you get this weird unease because you're not doing anything else with your hands or your eyes. Is that a modern problem, or did radio listeners feel the same thing? There's a tension here between attentive listening and the compulsion to multitask, and Daniel's wondering if the golden age of radio actually had something to teach us.
Oh, this is such a rich topic. And before we dive in, quick note. Today's script is coming to us from DeepSeek V4 Pro, so if anything sounds unusually coherent, that's why.
Though I'll reserve judgment until we see if it can capture my particular brand of lazy insight.
So let's start with the radio question, because the answer is genuinely surprising if you've only ever imagined it through old photographs. The classic image, right, is the family gathered around one of those enormous wooden cathedral radios in the living room, everyone leaning in, nobody talking. And that did happen, but it was only one mode, and probably not even the dominant one.
What were people actually doing?
They were doing things. Radio was the original background medium. By 1934, a study out of the University of Chicago found that something like 60% of radio listening happened while people were doing something else. Housework, cooking, sewing, repairing farm equipment, reading the newspaper. One researcher at the time described radio as, quote, a guest whom the housewife entertains while she goes about her daily tasks, which is a pretty perfect encapsulation.
The solitary earbud podcast listener folding laundry in 2026 is basically continuing a tradition that goes back almost a century.
And it gets more specific. The sociologists who studied this, people like Hadley Cantrell and Paul Lazarsfeld, they documented that different types of programming mapped onto different types of activity. Serial dramas, the soap operas, were explicitly designed to be listened to while doing housework. The pacing was slower, there was a lot of repetition, because the listener was expected to be in and out of the room or distracted.
The evening programming, the prime time stuff, that was different.
Much more attentive. That's when you'd get the big comedy shows, the prestige dramas, the news broadcasts. Families did gather for those, but even then there's fascinating detail in the audience research from the period. Men often read the newspaper while listening. Women knitted or mended. Children played quietly on the floor. The idea of just sitting and staring at the radio, that was almost never the reality.
The weird feeling, Daniel describes, that sense that you should be doing something while listening, might actually be the historically normal response. The anomaly might be the idea that you should sit still and give something your full auditory attention.
That's the argument I'd make. And there's cognitive science that backs this up now. The human brain processes auditory information differently than visual. We can absorb complex narratives through our ears, while our visual and motor systems are engaged in something routine. There's a reason people report their best podcast. Listening happens while driving, or doing dishes, or going for a run.
Let me push on that, though. Because I've had the experience Daniel's describing, and I think it's slightly different from pleasant background listening. It's more like, you're really into the podcast, you're following every word, but there's this nagging sense that you're wasting time because you're not also clearing your inbox or something. It's not, I want to do something with my hands, it's, I feel guilty that I'm not being productive.
That's a newer phenomenon, I think, and it's tied to something that changed between radio and podcasting. Radio was ephemeral. If you missed it, you missed it. So there was no backlog, no sense of falling behind. You listened to what was on, and when it was over, it was over. There was no guilt because there was no accumulation.
Whereas now I look at my podcast app and there are 17 episodes downloaded and I feel like I'm failing at leisure.
The backlog creates a productivity mindset around something that's supposed to be recreation. It's the same thing that happened with streaming television. When there were three channels and shows aired once a week, you didn't feel guilty about not watching something. Now, every unwatched episode is a tiny failure.
The root of the weird feeling isn't about audio versus visual, or even about multitasking. It's about the shift from appointment listening to on-demand listening, and the psychological weight of accumulation.
I think that's a big part of it. But there's another layer too, which is the social context. Radio in its heyday was often a shared experience, even when people were doing other things. You'd have the radio on in the kitchen, and other family members would be in and out. There was ambient awareness of other people hearing the same thing. Podcasts are intensely solitary. Even when you're listening in a shared space, the earbuds make it private.
Which means there's no social validation of the activity. If I'm sitting in the living room while my family listens to a radio drama, even if I'm also whittling or whatever, I'm participating in a collective experience. Nobody's going to walk in and say, "Why are you just sitting there?" But if I'm alone with earbuds in, staring at the wall, I look like I'm catatonic.
That social dimension shaped the content, too. Radio writers knew they were writing for groups. The humor had to work for multiple generations in the same room. The scares had to be scary but not traumatizing for kids who might be listening. There was a built-in moderation that came from the medium being shared.
Podcasting, by contrast, can be incredibly niche and specific, because the assumption is the listener is alone and self-selected.
Which is a strength in terms of creative freedom, but it might contribute to that weird, isolated feeling Daniel's talking about. You're having this intense, often quite intimate experience, but you're having it entirely alone, and there's no natural endpoint or shared context to anchor it.
Let's go back to the radio era for a minute, because I want to understand the texture of how people actually organized their days around it. Was it truly background, or did people plan their schedules around specific programs?
Both, depending on the era and the household. In the 1930s and 40s, radio was the primary home entertainment medium, and people absolutely structured their time around it. The networks published elaborate schedules, and households planned meals around favorite programs. But here's the key detail. Even when people planned to listen, they rarely stopped doing everything else. The radio was on during dinner. It was on during the evening card game. It was on while people got ready for bed.
The idea of appointment listening didn't mean appointment to sit still and pay full attention.
It meant appointment to be near a radio while that program is on. The attention was variable. People would tune in and out. The broadcasters understood this. That's why radio dramas had so much recapitulation. Characters would say things like, "As you know, John, we've been trapped in this mine for 3 days." It wasn't bad writing, it was functional. They knew someone had just tuned in, or someone had stepped out to check on the baby.
Which, by the way, is something modern prestige podcasts could learn from. I've listened to serialized narrative shows where, if you miss one sentence in episode 4, you're lost for the rest of the season.
That's a design choice that assumes a kind of listening that almost nobody actually does. Even the most dedicated podcast listener is probably doing something else, at least some of the time. Driving, walking, cleaning. The medium that assumes perfect continuous attention is fighting against how human beings actually process audio.
There's a parallel here with what we know about reading. People who study reading have documented that before the printing press, silent reading was almost unheard of. People read aloud, often in groups. The idea of sitting alone with a book, silently absorbing text, that was considered strange and remarkable. St. Augustine wrote about seeing St. Ambrose read silently and being amazed by it. And now solitary silent reading is the default.
You're suggesting solitary attentive podcast listening might be the equivalent of silent reading, a historically unusual behavior that came to seem normal?
I'm wondering if it ever actually became normal, or if we've just been telling ourselves it should be normal while continuing to fold laundry.
The data we have on podcast listening suggests the multitasking has always been there. Edison Research has been tracking this for years, and consistently, the top listening locations are at home, in the car, and while walking or exercising. The top companion activities are household chores, driving, and cooking. The sitting and doing nothing else category is tiny.
Daniel's weird feeling might actually be the norm trying to reassert itself against an artificial expectation. The expectation being, you should sit and focus. The reality being, human beings don't do that with audio.
Yet I don't want to dismiss the feeling entirely because I've experienced it too. There's something specific about podcast listening, especially with earbuds, that can feel more immersive than radio ever did. The audio quality is better. The content is often denser. And the lack of commercials and station breaks means there are no natural moments to disengage.
That's a structural difference worth exploring. Radio had built-in breaks. Not just commercials, but station identification, news updates, weather. Every 12 to 15 minutes, there was a natural pause. You could step away, refill your coffee, check on something, and come back without missing anything crucial.
Those breaks served a cognitive function. They gave your brain a moment to process what you'd heard. Podcasts that run 45 minutes with no breaks are asking a lot of working memory, especially if you're also navigating traffic or chopping vegetables.
Some of the smarter podcast producers have started adding chapter markers or mid-roll breaks that function the way radio breaks did. But it's not standard.
It should be. The research on attention span suggests that sustained attention on a single audio stream starts to degrade after about 15 to 20 minutes for most people. Radio formats evolved around that constraint. Podcast formats often ignore it.
Let me ask you something. You were a pediatrician for decades. You've presumably thought about how kids process audio versus adults. Is there a developmental angle here?
There absolutely is. Children's attention to audio develops differently than visual attention. Young kids can play with blocks or draw for extended periods while absorbing complex audio narratives. It's actually a different cognitive pathway. The audio processing and the motor activity can coexist without interference in a way that, say, reading and listening can't.
Because reading and listening compete for the same linguistic processing bandwidth.
That's why you can't read a book and listen to a podcast at the same time. But you can absolutely knit and listen, or drive and listen, or wash dishes and listen. The activities use different neural resources.
When Daniel feels weird about not doing something while listening, part of what might be happening is his brain is correctly identifying that he has unused cognitive capacity, his motor system is idle, his visual system is idle, and his brain is saying, we could be doing something with those systems right now.
That's not a flaw. That's just good cognitive resource management. The weird feeling might just be the awareness of inefficiency.
Which brings us full circle to the radio era. People in the 1930s weren't sitting around feeling guilty about multitasking. They just did it naturally. The guilt is a modern overlay.
I think the guilt comes from a cultural shift around attention and productivity. We've internalized this idea that if something is worth doing, it's worth giving your full attention. And if you're not giving something your full attention, you're not really respecting it, or you're not really experiencing it properly.
Which is a very recent idea, historically speaking. For most of human history, the idea of giving something your undivided attention was reserved for moments of genuine danger or intense social interaction. The default state was divided attention.
The anthropologist. I'm blanking on the name, but there's been good work on this. The argument is that constant partial attention was the evolutionary norm. You needed to be aware of your surroundings while doing anything. The modern open plan office or the quiet library are the aberrations.
What's the practical takeaway here for someone like Daniel? If you're feeling weird about podcast listening, should you lean into the multitasking, or should you try to cultivate the ability to just sit and listen?
I'd say do what the medium and your brain are optimized for. If you're listening to a narrative podcast, find a companion activity that uses different cognitive resources, something manual and routine, driving a familiar route. You'll actually retain more because the mild physical activity keeps your arousal level optimal for attention.
If you really want to just sit and listen, give yourself permission to do that without guilt, but also without expecting it to feel natural. It might feel strange because it is strange, historically and cognitively.
There's also a middle ground that radio listeners used extensively. The half-attentive state where you're not doing a specific task, but you're not rigidly focused either. Sitting on the porch. Lying on the couch with your eyes closed. The kind of listening where your mind wanders and comes back. That's not multitasking, and it's not focused attention. It's a third thing.
It's probably the most pleasant mode, honestly. Some of my best podcast experiences have been half asleep on a Sunday afternoon, drifting in and out.
Which is also how a lot of people experienced radio in its heyday. The late night broadcasts, the quiet music programs, were designed for exactly that kind of listening.
Let's talk about the content side for a moment. If radio was designed for distracted listening, and podcasts are often designed for focused listening, is that mismatch part of the problem?
I think it is. And it's not just about attention, it's about emotional pacing. Radio had to earn your attention every few minutes. There was an understanding that the listener might drift away, so you had to keep pulling them back. Podcasts can afford to be more self-indulgent because the assumption is the listener chose this, downloaded it, and is committed.
That assumption might be false. Just because someone downloaded your episode doesn't mean they're going to stay with it if you lose them for 30 seconds.
The download is not the listen, and I think some podcast creators forget this. They front-load all the interesting material because they're competing for the download, but then the actual episode meanders.
Radio producers in the golden age couldn't afford to meander. If you lost the audience for even a minute, they might turn the dial and never come back.
There's a famous story about Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air. They did a production of Dracula in 1938 before the War of the Worlds broadcast, and Welles was obsessed with pacing. He insisted that every scene had to have a hook in the first 15 seconds because he knew listeners were fickle. That discipline came from the medium.
Compare that to a modern podcast where the hosts spend the first 10 minutes chatting about their weekends.
Which can be charming if you're already invested in the hosts as personalities. But it's a completely different contract with the audience. Radio assumed you were just passing through. Podcasting assumes you're a subscriber who's chosen to be there.
Maybe that assumption is what creates the weird feeling. When you're a subscriber, there's an implicit obligation. You've committed. And if you're not paying full attention, you're not honoring that commitment.
Whereas with radio, there was no commitment. You owed the broadcaster nothing. You could tune in for 5 minutes and leave. The power dynamic was completely different.
One solution might be to approach your podcast queue with more of a radio mentality. You don't have to finish every episode. You don't have to listen to every episode you've downloaded. The backlog is not a to-do list.
That's good advice, and I should probably take it myself. I have episodes from 2023 that I'm still theoretically going to listen to someday.
You're never going to listen to those.
But deleting them feels like admitting defeat.
This is exactly the problem. We've turned leisure into an obligation.
Okay, let me pull on a thread we mentioned earlier. The social dimension. Because I think this is actually the biggest difference between radio listening and podcast listening, and it might be the deepest source of that weird feeling. When families gathered around the radio, or even when a housewife listened alone while doing chores, there was a shared cultural context. Everyone was listening to the same programs. The next day at school, or work, or the grocery store, you could talk about last night's episode of Fibber McGee and Molly or whatever. It was a common reference point.
Whereas my podcast listening is so niche that I've literally never met another person who listens to some of the shows I follow.
And that creates a kind of experiential isolation. You have this rich, engaging experience, and then you have nobody to share it with. The experience stays locked inside your head.
Which might be why people feel compelled to tweet about podcasts, or join subreddits, or Discord servers. They're trying to recreate the social context that radio provided by default.
Those online communities can be great, but they're not the same as casual, in-person conversation. There's a difference between, did you catch the latest episode, over the water cooler, and posting a hot take into a forum of strangers.
The water cooler moment was built into radio. It was assumed. Networks scheduled their biggest shows on the same nights, partly to create those next-day conversations.
Podcasting has tried to recreate this with weekly release schedules and social media campaigns, but the fragmentation of the audience makes it nearly impossible to achieve the same density of shared experience.
Unless you're one of the tiny handful of mega podcasts that everyone listens to. But even then, the listening is asynchronous. You and I might both listen to the same show, but on different days, at different times, in different contexts.
The asynchrony is a feature in terms of convenience, but it's a bug in terms of social connection. Radio was synchronous. If you wanted to hear the program, you had to be there when it aired.
Being there when it aired meant you were part of a simultaneous audience of millions. There's something psychologically powerful about knowing that you're experiencing something at the same moment as millions of other people.
Marshall McLuhan wrote about this. He called radio a tribal drum that created a shared acoustic space across vast distances. The simultaneity was central to its power.
Podcasting has almost none of that. Even live podcasts are a tiny niche.
Yet, I don't want to romanticize the radio era too much. There were significant downsides to that shared cultural context. It homogenized culture in ways that excluded a lot of voices. The gatekeeping was intense. If you couldn't get on a network, you couldn't reach an audience.
Podcasting democratized that completely. Anyone with a microphone and an internet connection can reach a global audience. The trade-off is that the audience is fragmented and the social context is thinner.
It's the same trade-off we've seen across media. More choice, more diversity of voices, but less shared cultural experience.
Which is not a new observation, but it does connect directly to Daniel's original question. The weird feeling might partly be loneliness. You're having an intimate experience alone, and there's no natural outlet for it.
The intimacy of podcasting is interesting in itself. Radio was intimate too, the voice in your living room, but it was a broadcast intimacy. The host was talking to millions. Podcast hosts often talk as if they're talking to one person. The earbuds make it feel like a conversation.
Which can create a kind of parasocial relationship that's even more intense than radio ever was. And then when you finish the episode, you're alone again, and the transition can be jarring.
There's research on this. People who listen to a lot of podcasts report feeling like the hosts are their friends. It's not pathological, it's just how human social cognition works. If you hear someone's voice in your ear for hours a week, your brain treats them as a social connection.
Then you feel weird because you've just spent an hour with your friends, and now you have to go back to your actual life where nobody else knows them.
I think that's a real part of it. The experience is socially rich in one sense and socially impoverished in another.
What do we do with all of this? Daniel's asking a practical question. He's feeling weird about podcast listening. We've diagnosed about 6 different possible causes.
Let me try to synthesize. Cause 1, cognitive mismatch. Your brain has unused capacity and it's signaling that. Solution, give it something manual to do. Cause 2, the productivity guilt from the backlog. Solution, treat your queue like a radio dial, not a to-do list. Cause 3, the lack of social context. Solution, find people to talk to about what you're listening to or accept that solitary listening is fine. Cause 4, the absence of natural breaks. Solution, don't be afraid to pause. Cause 5, the intimacy hangover. Solution, recognize it for what it is and don't pathologize it.
That's a solid list. I'd add one more. Cause 6, we've been trained by a century of media criticism to think that passive consumption is somehow morally inferior to active creation. There's a Protestant work ethic applied to leisure. You should be making something, building something, learning something. Just enjoying a story feels vaguely sinful.
That's deeply American, by the way. Other cultures don't have the same anxiety about leisure.
We're Americans. Daniel's originally Irish, living in Israel. But I think the productivity anxiety has globalized pretty effectively at this point.
The Protestant work ethic has excellent distribution.
The solution to that one is harder. It's basically get over it, which is not very satisfying advice.
Sometimes the unsatisfying advice is the correct advice. You're allowed to enjoy things without optimizing the experience. You're allowed to listen to a podcast while doing nothing else, and it's not a waste of time. It's just living.
That sounds like something I'd say while napping.
You do have a gift for unapologetic leisure.
It's a sloth thing. We invented leisure.
You also claim sloths invented pizza, so forgive my skepticism.
Both can be true. We were very productive before we got tired.
That doesn't even make sense.
I want to circle back to something we touched on earlier, about the design of radio programs versus podcasts. You mentioned the repetition in radio dramas. Is there anything else about the craft of radio writing that podcasters could learn from?
Radio writers understood something that a lot of podcasters don't, which is that audio is a time-based medium and you have to manage the listener's experience of time. Radio scripts used sound to mark time in ways that were almost musical. Scene transitions had audio cues. Silence was used deliberately, not as dead air, but as punctuation.
Podcasters are often terrified of silence. They fill every gap with words or music.
It's exhausting to listen to. The ear needs rest, just like the eye needs paragraph breaks. Radio producers understood this intuitively. A well-placed pause can do more than 30 seconds of narration.
There's also the use of sound effects and ambient audio to create a sense of space. Old radio dramas could transport you to a rain-soaked street or a crowded train station with just a few carefully chosen sounds.
They did it with mono audio and limited frequency range. The creativity that came from those constraints was remarkable. Modern podcasters have access to spatial audio and high-fidelity recording, and sometimes the result is actually less immersive because the sound design is too busy.
Constraints force creativity. Unlimited options often produce mush.
That's a principle that applies to a lot more than audio production.
Let's talk about the listening environment itself. The radio in the 1930s was a piece of furniture. It had a physical presence in the home. It was part of the architecture of daily life.
The act of listening was physical in a different way. You had to turn it on, let the tubes warm up, adjust the dial. There was a ritual to it.
Whereas now, I tap my earbud and a voice starts talking directly into my brain. There's no transition, no preparation, no physical anchor.
The lack of ritual might contribute to the weird feeling. There's no clear boundary between now I'm listening and now I'm not. The podcast just starts, and then it stops, and life continues seamlessly.
Rituals help us transition between mental states. That's why theaters dim the lights and churches have bells.
Radio had the warm-up of the tubes and the crackle of the signal, and the announcer's voice saying the call letters. By the time the program started, you were ready to listen.
Even the limitations of the medium created a kind of focus. You couldn't rewind. You couldn't pause. If you missed something, you missed it. That created a gentle pressure to pay attention that podcasting completely lacks.
The ability to pause and rewind is obviously a net positive, but it does change the psychology of listening. You know you can always go back, so you don't have to be fully present.
It's the same thing that happened with photography. When every shot cost money and you had to wait to see the results, people composed more carefully. Now we take 100 photos and sort them out later. The ease reduces the intentionality.
One practical suggestion for Daniel, try listening to something live. A radio broadcast, a live stream podcast, anything where you can't pause or rewind. See if that changes the feeling.
That's an interesting experiment. I might try it myself.
You'd have to stay awake for the whole thing.
That's the challenge, yes.
All right, let's zoom out for a moment. We've been talking about radio versus podcasting, but there's a bigger historical arc here. Before radio, the primary form of home entertainment was probably reading aloud or playing music. Both were active and often social. Radio introduced passive, mass-distributed entertainment into the home for the first time.
There was moral panic about it. The same panic that greeted television, video games, the internet, smartphones.
Every new medium goes through this. People worried that radio would destroy conversation, that families would stop talking to each other, that children would be corrupted. Some of those concerns were legitimate and some were ridiculous.
The concern about passivity was a big one. That people would stop making their own entertainment and just passively consume whatever was broadcast.
There's a grain of truth there. But it's also true that radio created new forms of active engagement. People wrote letters to stations. They formed fan clubs. They discussed programs with friends. The passivity was never as total as the critics feared.
Just as podcast listeners today are not actually passive. They're thinking, reacting, forming opinions, discussing online. The brain is active even when the body is still.
The passive consumption critique almost always underestimates what's happening in the listener's or viewer's mind.
I do think there's something to the idea that the physical passivity can feel uncomfortable. Our bodies evolve to move. Sitting still for long periods is unnatural.
Which is why the multitasking solution is so elegant. It gives the body something to do while the mind is engaged. It's not a compromise, it's actually the optimal state.
It's what people did during the radio era, without even thinking about it.
Maybe the answer to Daniel's question is simpler than we've been making it. If you feel weird listening to a podcast while doing nothing, stop doing nothing. Pick up something to do with your hands. It's not cheating. It's how human beings have always consumed audio.
If you want to just sit and listen, do that too. But recognize that it's a specific and somewhat unusual mode of attention. Don't expect it to feel natural, and don't judge yourself if it doesn't.
The history of radio suggests that the most natural way to listen is with half your attention on the program and half on something else. That's not a bug. It's the feature that the entire medium was built around.
Which makes me wonder about the future. If we're moving toward more immersive audio, spatial audio, augmented reality audio, overlays, are we going to have to relearn how to listen?
Each new audio technology has required a period of cultural adaptation. When stereo was introduced, people had to learn how to listen to it. When headphones became common, it changed the listening experience again. Spatial audio will probably require its own adaptation period.
The fundamental thing, that audio is a companion medium, something that fits alongside other activities that probably won't change. It's too deeply wired into how our brains work.
The technology changes, but the cognitive architecture doesn't. We're still the same humans who gathered around the cathedral radio with our knitting and our newspapers.
Our weird feelings about not doing enough.
Those too, apparently.
One last thought before we wrap up. You mentioned the moral panic about radio. Do you think there's a moral panic about podcasting that we're not even aware of yet? Something future generations will look back on and find quaint.
Probably the parasocial thing. I think in 20 years we'll have a much better understanding of what it does to people to have hours of intimate, one-way conversation piped directly into their ears every day. Right now, we're just winging it.
That's a sobering thought.
It's not necessarily bad, but it's almost certainly doing something to us that we don't fully understand yet.
Something to ponder while folding laundry and listening to a podcast.
Corn. Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In 1907, a French phonograph company on Réunion Island briefly manufactured cylinders coated in a mixture of beeswax and crushed vanilla bean, believing the scent would enhance the listening experience. The vanilla degraded rapidly in the tropical humidity, and only one intact cylinder is known to survive, discovered in a sealed crate in a Saint-Denis attic in 1998. It still smells faintly of vanilla.
I have so many questions about the business meeting where that idea was approved.
I'm just impressed the vanilla held up for 90 years.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next time.
Go fold some laundry. It's historically authentic.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.